Never in the field of human conflict was so much owed by so many to so few. I hope, indeed I pray, that we shall not be found unworthy of our victory if after toil and tribulation it is granted to us. For the rest, we have to gain the victory. That is our task. Let us therefore brace ourselves to our duty, and so bear ourselves that if the British Empire and its commonwealths last for 1,000 years, men will still say, this was their finest hour. We shall not fail or falter. We shall not weaken or tire. Neither the sudden shock of battle nor the long-drawn trials of vigilance and exertion will wear us down. Give us the tools, and we will finish the job. We shall go on to the end. We shall fight with growing confidence and growing strength. We shall defend our island, whatever the cost may be. We shall fight in the fields and in the streets. We shall fight in the hills. We shall never surrender.
You have tried to change my country. You've tried to change my life. No one ever asked me if I thought that this was right. It's time for us to tell you that we will go through hell to defend our country and to help the
love this land. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is the English Defence League radio show, broadcasting live on blogtalkradio.com. The English Defence League radio show, the truth and the voice of the EDL. Once again, I've got to thank Dave for the great slides and the great script for this evening. So let me read out the title, the heading of the show this evening. English Defence League radio show, The Rape of Britain, SAVE. And I continue. Welcome to the English Defence League radio show with your host, Jeff Danger Man Mitchell, and my wingman is Dangerous Dave Milner. Tonight we'll be discussing the third in Mr. Tommy Robinson's landmark documentary series, The Rape of Britain, along with other topics of timely interest. Much will be covered with possible surprises along the way. We will highlight the demonic corruption that reaches from child rape in Islamic death cultists to the cowards in power who enable them. Survivors of the evil stand with patriots to look Satan's minions in the eye and declare no surrender, ever. All that is necessary for evil to prevail is that good men do nothing. Of course, that was by the late great Edmund Burke back in the 1770s. Those who make peaceful revolution impossible will make violent revolution inevitable. Of course, that was by the late great President John F. Kennedy. So, without further ado, let me pass it over to Dave in the great Vermont in the United States there, and also to all the listeners out there, wherever, whatever part of the world you're in, God bless you all, and especially the United States, Canada, all over the world. But with that, let's run. I can't hold Dave back any longer. He's jumping on the bit and ready to roll. And with that, Dave, over to you, buddy.
All right, and thank you, Jeff. Hello, everybody. And, of course, that's everybody on and off Earth. Yes, that's right. We're going to be doing an audio version of The Rape of Britain, the third part of it, tonight. And this is, as they always are, very powerful. But first, a little bit of housekeeping. Of course, we want to wish everybody in the United States, my fellow Americans, and UK, your American brothers and sisters, a happy Independence Day tomorrow. As for tonight, we will be here. I know we don't have a lot of listeners in Burlington, Vermont here, but we will be here having our annual fireworks celebration and Independence Day celebration tonight. That will begin the festivities at 6:30 p.m., and since we're rather far north here, in the American United States here, the fireworks will begin at 9:30 p.m. and they'll probably be over about 10 p.m. ish, right around there. Right now, the weather is 80 degrees Fahrenheit with fairly low humidity. But folks, if you're going to go to the fireworks display tonight, take at least a light jacket with you, especially if you're going to bring the kids. Because tonight's low is going to be 57 degrees Fahrenheit, and might be a little chilly down there at Waterfront Park or up in Battery Park where you get eaten alive by the mosquitoes. But either way, I hope everybody enjoys their Independence Day celebration, right?
Sorry,
Dad. But at any rate, a happy Independence Day to all of our American brothers and sisters out there, celebrating the republic that we once had and the one that we're going to work to get back. All right, guys. A word here also about the chat. I don't know if there's anybody in chat right now. Do we have anybody in chat yet, Jeff?
Yeah, just check in. Oh, my goodness me. Yes, we've got Duck Northwest Media's joined us tonight, and he's giving us a thumbs up. And he's saying turn on audio. That's what he's saying. He's got a question mark, two question marks there. Turn on audio. The audio is on Duck Northwest Media, and he says call in. I say won't speak with us. Okay. Yeah. No. Thank you very much for that, Northwest Media. It's good to have you here this evening. The audio should be turned on, my dear friend. Okay. I wanted to just let you know that Duckwest Media has joined us this evening, Dave.
All right. Well, and a good evening to you, Duck Northwest Media. Glad to have you here. And a good evening to the individual who is listening in studio. All right. Now,
yes,
if you guys
yes.
want to get into the chat here at the show, we podcast live every Sunday at 8:30 p.m. in the U.K. and that's 3:30 p.m. Eastern in the United States. Go to blogtalkradio.com. Use the White Top Center search box. Look for English Defense League Radio Show or EDL Radio. Follow the links. And if you're registered with Blog Talk Radio, you as well can get into the chat and Jeff will give you a shout out. And another announcement for everybody. We're going to, since the 7th of July falls on a, falls rather inconveniently in between the week, in the middle of the week, we're going to have a special show on Thursday, the 7th of July to mark the anniversary of the 7/7 bombing in London and also the 7/7 terror attack, BLM terror attack in Dallas. So that's going to be on the 7th, and it is going to be at our usual time, 8:30 p.m. in the U.K., 3:30 p.m. Eastern in the United States, and that'll be on Thursday. So now we're going to begin our playing of the Rape of Britain. This one is called SAVE. It is the third in Tommy Robinson's series of documentaries. And this, guys, is going to be very powerful. And we'll have these in three parts, partly because Block Talk Radio doesn't like files that go on longer than 15 minutes, and partly because Jeff and I will run some commentary in between. Okay, so if everybody's ready, we're going to begin. This one will be about 14 and a half minutes. This is part one. You're listening to the English Defense League Radio Show. This is The Rape of Britain, part three, SAVE, part one.
Meet Friday about 2 o'clock, if that's all right.
Yeah, that'll be okay, yeah.
And, Sarah, with you, I know your house was recently attacked. I have information, reliable information, that was Akil, Kasim, Jack. I don't know if you've heard any of those names as being involved, but...
Yeah, I have, actually. I know you're on about it. Yeah. So that's quite interesting. So let's see what Westminster Police will say about that one, eh?
Yeah, well, I'll go through it all with you. I'll see you on Friday then. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
That's weird because that's Sarah Rushton. Sarah Rushton's a survivor of grooming in Telford. But when I say we've obviously got 12 girls we've worked these programs on, 12 girls that have sat down, 12 girls that have been willing to sit on camera. But I've approached dozens and dozens of other women about historical abuse against them. Names I'm given names, I look into it and I go and try and find them. Now this lady, I'm heard, has helped lots of other victims. I've approached her. When I approached her, I got told in no uncertain terms, fuck off. Okay? Some have been welcoming, some have been cagey, some have been abusive. Sarah Rushton was one of them who was not interested at all in working with me. She's made it very clear she does her own work in helping victims of grooming. And didn't think my politics benefit the situation. She was quite clear about that. But something's changed. Something's changed. For her to now, I've left my phone number with all of them. She's now contacted me, wants to meet up. We'll see her Friday and find out what's going on. And find out what's changed her tunes. I'm aware that her house has been smashed to pieces recently. So it's probably that. We'll speak to her Friday. Since I put out my promo, my first episode, there were seven or eight firebombings, multiple houses attacked. It's one of those attacks that's brought us together.
Yeah, unfortunately, yeah.
Can you tell me what happened?
So basically, after you put your promo out, I was standing in my bedroom window looking down at my son. He was in the car. And a black Audi pulled into our driveway, KP12 NUH was the reg. It was a black Audi A4 and I'd just seen Asian driver with a beard. He took a look at the car, which my son was in, and then he looked up at the window, seen me, and that's it, he's backed off. Part of me was thinking, what the hell? And then other parts of me is thinking it could have been a delivery driver, he's got the wrong address, whatever. So my partner had taken the dog for a walk at the time, so I just rung him and said, like, you know, what had happened, this car had pulled up. I thought nothing of it, to be honest with you. Nothing, you know, it didn't come back, just left it. Later on that day, me and my son goes out, we go shopping, coming back from Wellington and driving up the road where we live. As I pass this car, I clock the car as he clocks me, and he put the brakes on straight away, so I knew that he was trying to stop, to turn around. So rather than turn into my junction, I span the car back round so that I'd be following him. And at that point, he just span his car around. He come flying back up the road. And as we were virtually front, he just swerved the car. And I don't know how, my lad, 15 at the time, he just grabbed the wheel off me. And we flew past, and then he put his brakes on again. So I just put my foot down, got stuck. There was a black Golf, and I don't know whether it was trying to hold me back or whether it was just me being paranoid at this time, but I was going to turn left at this point. He stopped me from doing that, pulled off very, very slowly, and then he took the left, so I just belted it, went down through Hadley, down a one-way street, trying to just get back to the house. Gets back to the house. Obviously, we had to ring the police at this point. They've come out, said that it's not much of a risk, so we couldn't have any security or anything put in at this point. So they, at that point, they just put a firebox so that nobody could send them.
So a car has essentially come to your house and it's tried to ram you off the road.
Yeah.
And you just read out the registration plate.
I never forget that.
You'll never forget the registration plate?
No.
You gave the police the registration plate?
Straight away, yeah.
And what have they done?
They said that they'd put it onto the ANPR and they'd done door-to-door inquiries down the road that it happened, looking for CCTV. But would you believe that they've got the car pulling up outside my house, they've got the car driving down the road when he ran me, and they've got him driving back up the road, but the only part that they're missing is the point where he actually tried to ram me off the road. What they're saying is it's got multiple people on the insurance, so they can't prove.
Have they made an arrest? Have they even spoke to anyone? No. They haven't even spoke to anyone.
Because can't prove the driver.
Okay, and I've got that registration plate, so I'm going to have a look at who owns that car. Yeah. Myself. That was one day. What happened then after that?
So we've had it investigated, and that car was owned at the time by Nasser Hussein. Nasser is also known as Harry. Now let's have a look at the family tree from our episode 2, where we looked at Munchie as the main target for the main alleged rapist. Who's Harry? Harry is Munchie's brother. You can see how intertwined and connected all of these incidents and families are.
It was about 2 weeks later. It was 20 past 12 overnight time. I'd literally just fallen asleep, and then there was all this commotion. I could just hear banging and smashing. I didn't know where it was coming from. I opened my bedroom door. My son's coming towards me saying, "Mom, what the hell, what the hell?" And I could hear a beeping, but the indicators of the car were flashing through the curtains, and straight away I thought it was fire. I opened the curtains and realised it was the car, and I could just see debris everywhere, like parts of my car all over the place. At that point I couldn't go out, and my partner was on the phone to the police. Luckily, because of them ramming us, trying to attempt to run us off the road, they put the gas warning on the property, so when we rang through on that night where they smashed the house up, it literally took 4.5 minutes to attend the property, and the whole street was swarmed with police. The sergeant come down and he had them knock on everybody's door in the area, basically trying to get the CCTV.
Now, have they got, so I believe, how many men turned up at the
house?
Three,
there was three.
Were they armed?
Yeah, they had an axe, an hammer, baseball bat. You can tell.
What did they smash up?
They wrote my car off.
Wrote your car off.
It's gone to the salvages now. It's gone. My front door, the glass in my front door, my window glass gone out of that completely. Luckily, my neighbour heard it and she screamed at him. And as soon as they heard her scream, that's it. They ran.
Have any men been arrested for that?
No.
Why would Asian men, Pakistani men, I'm within Telford, why would they be targeting your house or yourself since I put my film out? Why do you think?
I guess it's guesswork for them. They're trying, you know, any survivor, which I am a survivor.
So you're a survivor of?
Sexual abuse when I was 13.
You're 14 years old, you're pregnant, you're living with a 42-year-old Pakistani male. What was the situation with your mum and dad at this point? Like, were you missing
my mom and
from
dad
home?
I ran away.
So you were missing, so you run away from home at 14. 42 years old, you're 13. 14 now, I'm pregnant. Was there any involvement from social services? Where were social services for a child in this situation? Where were they?
They never come out to the house. Never did a visit. I remember having a meeting down in a house in Wellington somewhere, and he was sat by me. Every time I had a meeting, he would be there, so I couldn't open my mouth.
You have a meeting with social services, and the perpetrator, who's 42 and Pakistani, was present in the meeting?
Yeah.
At every meeting?
Yeah. And I'm sure he was registered as my foster dad.
Just you two?
Yeah.
You're pregnant at the same time. Were social services aware you're pregnant?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And school.
And the school were aware?
Yeah.
No questions?
No, he used to drop me off at school in the taxi.
He used to drop me to school and bring you home from school. And you've run away from home and you're living with him and there's not a... The man who was raping you was taking you to meetings with social services and they were sitting and holding the meetings in front of him and with him about your protection.
Yeah. I wasn't put on no child protection order or anything like that. They never looked after me. They just left me there. And maybe I was a bit troubled, but come on. I was only 13. I was only little. Nothing to me really.
Did he give you a drink or drugs?
Yeah.
How often?
Weed every day.
Yeah.
Drink as and when I wanted it. To be honest with you, the drink was more Terry.
Terry is on.
It was hooch. Remember that hooch?
I remember apple hooch.
That's what he used to.
Did you have your baby?
Yeah.
So you had your baby at 14?
Yeah.
This man, the main perpetrator, we were looking at him last year. We were getting close to him.
As part of our other investigations into grooming within the town of Telford, unfortunately during the filming of these documentaries, he passed away without ever facing justice.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
No problem.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
Well, I had the police come out of the blue to my house and say that another victim had come forward and that they'd been told to come and see me by this victim so that I could back up what she was saying.
Had you ever been to the police previously about him?
I went to victim support when I was 16. Because it was meant to be a confidential service and didn't understand then that certain things that they have to take forward, they can't just leave it. So I didn't understand that then and I just laid it all out on the table and she said, just give me 2 minutes and I'll be back with you. And she come back in about 10 minutes later with two CID officers. So she'd rung the police.
And how come no reaction was taken against him?
Because I was too scared. Too scared to go to court.
Scared.
Yeah.
When you've gone missing, you're living with an older Pakistani man. Was your mum going to the police? Did she go to the police?
Yeah, well, my mum and my dad. But they said to my mum that it's better to know where I was, and they didn't want to rock the boat and have me run again.
That's what the police said to your mum?
Yeah, and that I was settled. And my dad sent me dad a bit. He was constantly on the phone, and he spoke to a sergeant, and he said to him, your daughter's not the first victim, and she won't be the last. I can tell you now, he's fathered several children, with children. I'm still there.
But they didn't do anything?
Nope. Because nobody had come forward.
You were still living with him.
Well, there's proof there.
He's, so we were getting close to him, we were looking at him.
Mm-hmm.
And then...
He's dead.
He's dead now.
He's dead. He died. Told me I was a filthy... Something like that.
Do you know what that means? You're aware now of what that means.
A what? Is it a whore?
A white. White trash. White slag.
Yeah, well...
So it seems that your perpetrator took you as his property, as his singly.
They said that I was damaged goods when I got pregnant, so they couldn't use me anymore.
Once you were pregnant.
Which they couldn't, could they, if I was pregnant? They couldn't sell me up and down the country, could they? Or were they bum?
And that's part one. Welcome back to the English Fencing Radio Show with your host, Jeff Danger Man Mitchell. Jeff, your views so far?
Well, the thing that grabs you is when you start listening to the story and what's unfolding is how, you know, the women at the time or the girls at the time was totally put aside, and that they was offering more support to the rapist that was doing it to these ladies, should we say. And it seems the old Bill wasn't interested. It comes across as they was basically they were supporting the jihad rapists out there. That is the way it's come over, you know, third rate citizens. That's the way they looked at in the eyes of these, especially in Salford, the way they look at the women in Salford. And they're a part of this whole thing, this Muslim gang mafia, that they are taking back and as left, right and centre. They're about as corrupt and perverse as what you got those that are doing the offensive. Because if you're covering up for them, then you're part of the problem. And that is exactly what we see there. And unfortunately, what we're hearing is the plight of some of these ladies. And that's what you're hearing with this lady in part three of the Rape of Britain, Tommy's docu. That is what we're hearing. And, but it is, when you look here, and I know you've got a worldwide audience that will listen to this, doesn't matter how they try to cover this up, this is out there. This is what Mr. Tommy Robinson has done, because the voice of the people need to be heard. We're fed up with them trying to push it under the carpet, and the way that the government has been trying to cover it up for so many years, because they're all part of the problem as well. So here we go, once again, onward and forward with what we've been talking about. It seems like a whole generation, at least since I've been doing this radio show, 10 years, 15 years, 20 years more, because before this I've done a poll tour, and we were talking, discussing it there. So we'll be talking 20 years, 20 or 30, maybe 40 years. But this is it, and it continues. This spiral of evil continues because they're being covered up, and the perpetrators are allowed to abscond out of the country, go and disappear into Pakistan and all that. And all we hear is they're going to do something or other. You know, they're going to do a report. Where do these reports go, ladies and gentlemen? Yes, we've uncovered so much, and we've done a lot, but it seems we're still not getting nowhere with this. With these people in power, and in the councils, in the police department, the only way to do it is just to have a total shake-up. I can't see any other way around it. Something needs to be done. We're all fed up with hearing about and poor lasses that suffer so much. But with that, Dave, I don't take too much time up because we have got three parts of it to play tonight. But back to you, for you, how did you look at, view this, or observe this, should I say, Dave?
Right, Jeff. Well, personally, I want to say to my American brothers and sisters, guys, the fact that the press over here, the fake stream media, isn't reporting that it's going on over here doesn't mean that it's not. What Jeff is talking about has gone on in the UK for 40 years, according to some of the reports from some of the advocacy groups and things of that nature, for the past two generations. And remember, since 9/11, there has been a vast increase in the importation into the United States of Mohammedans, and they're all over the country now. It's, you know, heavily concentrated in states like Michigan and Wisconsin, and even places like Tennessee and places like that. If you haven't heard of this sort of thing happening, understand that you just haven't heard of this sort of thing happening in the United States yet. Now, get to the two things that impress me about this first part. Well, the first thing that always impresses me is the fact that these young girls and sometimes young boys are pimped out by these Mohammedans. And they're pimped out by them because they're not Muslim. They're non-Muslim girls or boys, and these Mohammedans don't think that they're human. So they do with them whatever they want to. They possess them with their right hand. And I don't want to hear anybody say, but it's not every Muslim, because if that was the case, none of this would be going on. If there were only a few percentages of these Mohammedans doing this stuff, and the rest of them, almost all of the rest of them, didn't approve of it, this wouldn't go on, because their butts would be dragged down to the police station with complete statements and things of that nature, and they'd be in prison. So there's that. That's number two. And number three, it's just shocking. Always shocking, even though we've heard it before, to hear of supposed law enforcement officers saying, well, she's settled now. And they're talking about an underage girl. She's settled now, and she isn't the first victim, and she won't be the last. Yeah, and that wasn't the first bribe you got to help make that happen, and it won't be the last either, mother. So, Jeff, those are my impressions. Do we have anything out of the chat before we start part two of this?
No, we haven't, but I agree with everything that you said there, Dave, and I know how it makes you feel, because I know when you feel very angry about an issue, and I feel exactly the same as you. And it's like a spiraling thing, isn't it? We fight it all the way, but they still keep doing it. All the time we allow this vermin to sit on our shores like they had been, the invasion, because that's what it feels like, Dave, and more are coming through the gates and more of these crimes are going undetected because there's so many of them, Dave. That is the problem. I do not know how this is going to end. I don't think it's going to end in a very good place. Because in the end, there's got to be some sort of rebellion against it. You know, enough's enough of our kids being raped, as you say, the rape of Britain. You know, and there will be a time where people will take a firm stand against it. I hope so. Whether I'm not enticing any sort of violence, but I'm just saying, hypothetically, in a future, will people have had enough? What you see when people have had enough is people will rise up to what's going on. But that's all I'm saying, because I feel very angry. And at the same time, I don't take too much time up now today, because I know we've got another part to play and we can discuss it a little bit more, can't we? So with that, Dave, let me pass it back to you, bro.
All right. Okay, guys, we're going to go ahead and play the second part of this. This one's a little over 14 and a half minutes long. This is part two of the Rape of Britain, episode 3, SAVE. And here you go. You're listening to the English Defense League Radio Show.
Well, I know recently you've took part there's an independent inquiry in Telford that's happening now.
Waste of time.
What makes you say that?
One, it's funded by Telford and Region Council. And I can't trust them. They're going to trust anyone. You know, 1996, 97 was my case when it was live. And you've got Head of Children's Services, it's Graham Bold. That, you know, that really puts...
Do you feel safe to name people?
No.
Have you ever felt safe?
No.
When was the last time you felt safe?
When I was sat on my nan's lap when I was a kid, she was rocking me. I just cut my hard face now. But I've got the attitude that nothing bothers me, but it does. I'm a complete mess. I've not had counselling. I just got on with it. My way of getting my justice was to move forward. And I just threw myself into education, did whatever courses I could, raised my son the best I could. And I've messed up along the way, loads. I haven't meant to. I just feel a bit lost and angry, because I never knew this was going on. I thought I was the only person back then. And it sickens me.
I know that this is difficult and in for you to sit and talk through. Do you mind if I ask why you're saying?
Why shouldn't I have a voice? Why has my voice always been lost? Why can't I sit here and stand up for myself without feeling scared of the repercussions all the time? I haven't done nothing wrong. I've never done anything wrong. I've tried my best. All through my life I've tried my best. Sorry. And then you got on walking around the streets still.
So when this was happening to you as a child, you was totally unaware of the scale of what was going on in Telford?
I didn't have a clue. Not a clue. I promise you,
I sense from you, and you've got nothing. I can see that you are talking like you feel a guilt when you shouldn't, and you don't. There's no...
I know, but... I don't understand why I chose to do, go and live with him and everything, but I felt at that time I got nothing, I got nowhere, I didn't care about myself. I chopped all my hair off, burnt all my school stuff, my books. I just took a bitch fit, I guess. I didn't want to be me anymore. I don't want to be me now.
Do you realise now that this was all that? Do you realise now that that's all the reaction of a cycle of abuse of a child? do you view it that way now? Like, I know when you were, could you see a 13-year-old child now? Could you imagine a 13-year-old child now being put through what, do you see the crime?
I'm doing this because I've got a niece growing up, I've got a granddaughter growing up, and it needs to stop, because like, I won't be able to handle it if anything happens to them.
What can I, do you mind if I ask you about your experience at that age of the police?
I didn't see them.
You never saw them?
No. The only time I seen them was when they come to arrest me because I jumped the taxi from Shrewsbury. Because I was scared. So I jumped the taxi. 2 weeks later they come to arrest me and took me back. They took me back to Shrewsbury because that's where I jumped the taxi from. Two coppers as well. I was on my own. I was only 13. I'm on my own. They took me all the way back to Shrewsbury to the cop shop. And as we're pulling in, this other cop car comes, they wind the window down, they have a conversation, and he turns around and says, yeah, I'll be with you when I've dropped this dog off into custody. Me.
How old was you?
13.
13. You're still living in Telford?
Yeah.
Are you aware of any abuse that's still currently happening? Is this problem current or is it historic?
Current.
It's current.
Yeah. Yeah.
I understand that you speak now with lots of other children and women who are survivors or victims at the time.
Uh-huh.
You've spent years now.
Yeah. And I chose to do that because I'm one of them too, and I can feel, I know their pain and their fear, and I know that I feel that if there was something like what we have out there back then I wouldn't have felt so alone in the world, you know. I felt there was no support, no one to turn to, and that's sad because everybody needs somewhere to go. Do you know what my dream would be? And if I won the lottery, or if I come into any substantial amount of money, and I promise you this on my life, the first thing that I would look into was buying a retreat so that these victims have got somewhere to go, even, you know, if it's for a night, or where they can get an education, proper counselling. That is the first thing I would do, because there's nothing, and that we need that. There's nothing, and why?
The council, the police, everyone's now aware that you were a victim.
You know, when I disclosed at 16, they put a file in Marisgate Police Station with Chowdhury on it. When Chalice come about, not one word off it.
They didn't come and see you?
Not one word.
So when Operation Chalice come out, which was to look at the historic and go through the files, you have a file that shows you were impregnated at 14, you were living with a 42-year-old Pakistani man, and they didn't come and see you?
No.
You've never heard a word from Operation Chalice?
No, not a word.
So how many other girls like you do you think there are in Telford? Because I've seen your top police officer attempt to dispute the figures of victims. But do you think we're aware of all the victims? Do you think the police were aware of all the victims?
No. This is massive. This is huge. And there's so many that are too scared come forward or ask for support because they don't feel like there's anybody there.
Have you had any counselling?
No.
Where are you with trust?
I ain't got none.
Who do you trust?
No one.
Ahmed Nawar.
He's Becky Watson's killer. And Becky's in the ground, 13-year-old child.
Sarah. Yeah, I just want to thank you. Well, thank you for taking the time. And
no worries.
Okay, man.
Sorry. Sorry.
No, don't be sorry. You've got nothing to be sorry for, man. It's horrible seeing you relive it. But yeah. Thank you. You alright?
Yeah, I'm good.
You've done great, man.
Yeah, okay.
That must be fucking horrible.
Yeah.
To talk through. In front of three total strangers.
I wanted to meet you today because I'm a little bit concerned at the fact that I watched a video of yours and you said that you've got all of these people coming forward to you and you're not the right person to be dealing with them. And knowing what it's like to be in that place where you think that there's no one and no support or whatever is a really dark place to be. And I am in the process now. I've worked with victims and survivors now for a good few years. I've done my own research.
The fact that, as I've said, I'm not the right person for this. Yeah. I'm not a counsellor. I am not the right person, but I have had some people contacting me. And if you're, and yeah, you're a survivor, so you'll understand fully.
Which is why now I've set up my own organisation now, and that's called SAVE. It's going to be a survivor-led organisation where, because there's a lot of survivors out there, and our purpose will be to rebuild that victim's life, not take them back to the trauma, look forward instead of back. And I know that that's going to take a lot of hard work because I've already been doing that.
I'm hoping that this is what you're saying, so when girls come forward to me, there's a way I can direct them.
Yeah, absolutely. Maybe if there was something back in 1997 when my case was live, maybe then I would have had the strength to go forward. Maybe there wouldn't have been other victims. I'll always carry a lot of guilt.
I saw that.
Because I know there's other victims of the same perpetrator. And like I say, I'll always carry that guilt. But this is about now looking forward.
You said it was your dream, yeah? So is this the first
this
step?
This is the start.
And for you, you know, so I've contacted a post-traumatic stress disorder, an organisation who deal with military personnel. They deal with women as well. They do a in-depth therapy, yeah, intense therapy. Mm. I've spoke to them about the possibility of three or four girls going for a retreat, yeah. Would it be something you'd be interested in?
Absolutely.
But they would coach you, so then you can coach other girls that come in and help them.
Yeah.
So I'd say girls should be interested in.
Yeah, definitely.
We'll make it. I've spoken to them. They want to meet you. I've told them.
Oh,
explain the whole situation. We'll put you both in contact.
Well, thank you. Positive.
If there's girls watching these films, they don't know who to turn to. They don't want to ring the police. I'm finding they don't trust the police. Don't trust the council. All these groups have failed them. But they need someone to speak to. How are they going to speak to you?
At the minute, I'm going to do like a Facebook group just to get the name out there. Basically, I'm going to have cards made up and some flyers, so at your next protest maybe I can hand some out if you want.
We do have, every time we put something out, more people come forward.
Yeah,
as I said, I'm slowed under. I don't have the team to do it.
Yeah.
I do not have the team to do it. Okay, well, Sarah, you're going to face a backlash.
Yeah, absolutely.
Unfortunately, as is each one of the survivors in this, you are a survivor. I wish you every luck. And I hope we've ended our meeting better than the first time we started.
I'm sorry about that.
Don't be, okay?
I am sorry, but
I get it.
This means a lot to me.
No, I get it. And as I said, you're totally right as well. It should be non-political. It should be non-this. It should just... And I'm the wrong person to be involved in that.
This is like people's lives,
yeah,
you know?
I know.
Forever.
Come back to me when you've got your website. Come back to me when you've got any information, and I'll make sure that the people watching our videos are aware of who they can contact and how they can contact you.
Yeah, nice one. Cool. Thank you.
Thank you. Cheers.
And there you go. Welcome back to the English Fence League Radio Show with the host, Jeff Danger, Matt Mitchell. And that was part two. Very powerful. Sarah has decided that she's going to start her own organization, which is really good. Tommy Robinson said, he just doesn't have the team to give these young ladies the kind of counseling and protection and things that they need to have. And you guys heard Sarah yourselves. This is massive. The things that we hear about, the things that the press covers, and the things that have been uncovered by academics and other victims, support groups, and things of that nature, it's just the tip of the iceberg of the number of victims that there are, because they're scared to death of this Muslim mafia. And that's really what it's all about. And before I turn it over to Jeff, I just want to say that really that's what it's all about. When they say Asian men, they don't mean Chinese men or Japanese or Thai or Vietnamese. They're talking about Muslims. They're talking about Mohammedans. And not all of them are a single race. Okay, Islam is not a race. So if that is in your heads, if you've been taught that, get that out of your heads now. Because what's real is what is happening to these young ladies, and in some cases young men, who are not Muslims, who are being exploited because they are non-Muslim. And the authorities are not only doing nothing about it, they're actually aiding in it. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to the host of the show, Jeff. Your views, buddy.
Well, the first thing I thought as I was listening and observing what the lady was saying was that all the emotions coming through, and I felt it. I felt what she was nightmare, she was reliving. Because you say things when you're talking, say to Tommy, you remember certain sequences of events, and it automatically triggers you. You know, you remember a certain time, a flashpoint, and some of the most horrific things that probably happened to that young woman, that she's, every time she speaks about it, she's reliving it. And what I did feel at that time when I was listening, at the quite the early stages of that, was the despair. You know, that is, and hearing a young woman crying, it tears my heartstrings. You know, we say this time and time again. This is just a human being, a young lady, who found herself in the grasp of these evil, evil cultists of death. I'm not calling it Islam. I don't believe in using that name to distinguish barbarians and cultists to that so-called religion of hate, because that's all it is. So I do, if you hear me, yes, I talk of it as the cultists of death, because I believe that's the best way to talk about these people, because they've got no apathy at all for the victims. Their victims are chosen by choice. They know the victims. They know how they can seduce these young victims and very vulnerable. And of course, I've got no feelings whatsoever towards this type of people. I do believe they need to be castrated and kicked out of the country. And whether you like that opinion or not, that's my opinion. And I believe that. I believe that because, you know, there's so many women that Tommy's talked to that we've had one of the ladies on his show before, and I can't see any other way. We think you just give them a few years prison, let them out, and that they're going to be good at behaving themselves. No, they couldn't continue, and it's very rare that you find and catch them. So, you know, that's the way I look at it. It makes me very angry, as I'm controversial, what I said. Tough. If you don't like it, call me, call the show. If you think my opinion is not right, debate me over it, okay? If you're one of those who's out there and, you know, you want to support these cultures, then call in. I dare you. There you go. With that, Dave, I'll pass it back to you for your comments, mate.
All right. Jeff, well, I've basically made the comments I want to make for part two, but I do want to say that, you know, it's interesting that Sarah didn't like Tommy Robinson at first. She felt like his politics got in the way of resolving the problem, which I don't think she quite understood, that the points that Tommy Robinson makes about Islam and its influence precipitate the problem. But I think she's getting that now, and I think that's a good thing. And she is right, though, and Tommy Robinson said it, that there should be nothing political about this. This isn't about politics. This is about children and grandchildren, and it's about civilization, treating people in a civilized manner. Kids shouldn't be impregnated when they're 12, 13, 14 years old. You know, I mean, it's not like it was the way when you and I grew up, Jeff. I mean, okay, yeah. We were that age. The girls were that age. Yes, we had our little things we were doing together and things like that. But nobody was thinking about girls being pimped out across a country or anything of that nature. This is diabolical. And that is what Tommy Robinson was fighting against. And that is what, in a way, Sarah is fighting against. She's fighting to help the victims. It comes to, Jeff, something I was talking about in my show, The Way Back. How can people contribute? People listen, and they hear that there's a problem, and they go, well, what can I do? And you know, Jeff, that when there's an army, you have different corps, different, I suppose you would say, departments of an army that handle things in different ways. One department will handle logistics, getting the supplies to the soldiers. Another one will handle communications, making sure that the soldiers in the field get their signals right with the commanders that are in the rear and all of that sort of thing. There are other departments that fix the equipment and everything that the soldiers actually need. There's always something to do when you have a confrontation of this scale. And what Sarah is doing is just opening up another corps in this battle. Tommy Robinson has his corps, the things that he's doing, and she's got the things that she's doing. So that I see what she's doing as very useful, very necessary, and she is an extremely brave woman to come forward to put aside what her preconceptions about Tommy Robinson and join with him in doing something to help her fellow victims, and in the process, Jeff, helping herself. I think it's pretty darn fantastic. And with that, I'm going to ask you, is there anything out of the chat before we hit this final part here?
No, I can't see anything, but I just want to make one more comment about what Sarah's doing. That, from what she's been through, what she's experienced, and being a survivor, and so that's basically the way to look at these women that've come under attack by these people. She's a leader, leading from the front, and what she's doing is what's been... what we've looked at someone doing for many years, being in the English Defence League And we also had our angels, as you know, Dave, that used to talk to them. You know, when sort of before a demo started, some of our angels would be talking to some of the victims. And the victims would come forward to talk to the angels, basically, you know, talking woman to woman. And they'd come forward and say, yeah, I was a victim, and then they'd share the story. So a lot of our angels at the time were basically doing, in the background, social work, you know, because the social services was, you know, you can really just push them aside, because our angels was doing fantastic work. And I've got to give a shout out, if any of you angels are still listening to these shows, and I know you do, I salute you for all that you did back in the years. You helped so many people. So, and this is what a lot of people, all the crap that we've had over the years about the EDL, none of them see what went on in the background, what some of our angels was doing, was supporting these young women who had been very vulnerable and had been attacked. So I just wanted to make that, and once again to Sarah, being brave and courageous, I salute this survivor. With that, Dave, let me pass it back to you. I just wanted to make that comment. Yeah. Thank you, Dave.
All right. Okay. And with that, guys, we're going to hit this final part of Tommy Robinson's, the part three of Tommy Robinson's documentary series, The Rape of Britain. This is called SAVE, and now, of course, you know why it's called SAVE. And we're going to go ahead and finish this up. It's going to be almost 15 minutes long, just shy of that. You're listening to the English Defence League radio show.
Right, so I'm here. It's quite a big day for me today. I'm here because I support the survivors, and with Tommy doing a documentary, I need there to be a place where them survivors can go for support. So today I'm meeting with two people from a mental health charity, and they specialise in non-trauma therapy, which I think is the best way forward for these survivors. Last thing you want is to take them back to that trauma. This is about rebuilding their lives and not taking them backwards. So I'm hoping that this today goes really well, and that we get the outcome that we want, which is for possible training, and so that, and so maybe I will have the therapy, try it out, and then maybe then I will be able to then pass that therapy on to the people that I work with. SAVE is a survivors-led organisation, so I'd like all of the ladies who are involved to do this therapy as well, and for them to be able to deliver it as well as use it themselves.
So hi Sarah, I'm Vicky. What's up, Mick?
Yeah, I'm Mick.
Nice to meet you.
So Sarah, do you have any questions?
I have, yeah, I've just wrote a few down.
Well, I think that's probably the best way to start, really.
What I really need to know is what it involves, what the therapy involves. I'm quite interested in the non-trauma therapy, because I think for the survivors that's the best way forward for them, because I'd never want to take them back to that trauma. Mm. I'm all about rebuilding their lives, moving forward. Even though you'll never get over what's happened to you in the past, you can make a better future, I truly believe.
I'm ex-military. I served in the military for 30 years.
Thank you very much.
So I ended up in lots of rooms where I was training the military, and they were presenting things like nightmares, flashbacks, which really was then sort of given the label post-traumatic stress disorder.
Mm.
So first and foremost, it's non-trauma focused, and equally what we look at doing also is if anyone's medicated, we look at helping them coming off medication, because ultimately your body, if it's treated properly and if it's put in the right emotional space, can create everything that it needs to create.
Mm.
So that's like a long-term thing, and we always do that with medical guidance, but essentially we want you to be chemical-free, we want you to be alcohol-free, drug-free, distraction-free, so that you can get on and live your life. We literally help people change all of the emotional stuff that they've experienced that's holding them back. And that's what we do. And of course, this is, you know, we all of the quality work is always done as a one-to-one. We do run group work where we get groups together. All of the quality change is a one-to-one session.
Yeah, because a lot of people struggle with group.
Absolutely. They.
You know, a lot. I'm excuse me, I'm one of them people that I like it to be on my own until I've built trust or, you know, I know where I am.
We've just literally run a seven-day, we've just done a three-day program for seven people. There's no requirement to talk as part of our group. Not until you've changed. Because when you've then changed, what happens is every conversation you have after you've changed becomes cathartic. And equally sharing experience with others at that point, if you want to, is a very, very powerful thing. So ideally, we would want to train people that have been through that journey in some of the stuff we do, because some of it's very simple.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never believed, even from the offset, which I started in 2006, and I've probably sat with way over 4,500 veterans, just veterans on their own, you know, in one-to-ones. We've never believed in coping strategies because they just... Really, it's like putting a plaster on something.
Masking the problem.
Yeah, and of course, you know, there's really nothing can touch it at the level of emotional transition.
So how long does it take out, how do you work with these, how do you do it?
So generally speaking, what we would do is we'd look at creating a change program for a small group of people. But that group would stay together for 3 to 4 days, and what we would do is they would all receive individual one-to-one sessions that are designed to change them. There's also a level of education that goes with it, so they can understand what makes them tick, they can work out the triggers, they can also have moments where they recognize what they've changed, because that change needs to be integrated into their experience.
You know, we kind of describe ourselves as a tour guide. We take you on a journey, we guide you through a series of questions where you go in and you find your own answers at the level of your unconscious. And this may seem quite a difficult thing for you to get your head around at the moment, and we would totally understand that. But you have all of your answers in here, whether you believe it or not, and we take you on that journey so that you can change your relationship at the level of anger, sadness, fear, guilt, anxiety, that we help to change your belief system.
So after they've done that 3-4 days or whatever, what happens then? Is that it? Is that...
No.
No, not at all. People can...
We've always got... We create communities anyway. But equally, what we would look at doing with any particular organisation would be to create a group of its own coaches. So it's got its own focal point,
it's
got its own expertise, and it can then help itself, which is what we've done with other organisations. Mm. So.
What do you ideally want out of it, Sarah? What do you see is required based on your...
I'd like to be able to deliver it as well. I'd like to be able, like I say, it's going to be survivors-led, so all of the girls are going to need the therapy, and possibly the majority of them are quite capable of being able to deliver it as well. My long-term goal would be to have a retreat somewhere. To rebuild somebody's life, sometimes you've got to take them out, like you've just said, take them out of that situation, put them somewhere else, let them reflect. Even if it's for a night, if it's long term, whatever they need. Because like I say, there's nowhere. And I truly believe that if there was somewhere, the world would be a much brighter place for these survivors.
We're quite excited about the potential to help.
That's how I feel. You've just got to get a little help along the way, haven't you?
And we're not into long-term relationships either.
This is not protracted. No. It's not years and years of therapy on any level.
No.
You know, some slowly, some quickly. But essentially, once you start to change emotionally, the transition is pretty quick.
And it might mean that some of the survivors, as you call them, may need to come on a couple of change programs. You know, and you know, we will be there to assist until people are in a resourceful space.
Mm.
And, you know, but sometimes that requires, you know, doing a change plan, going away and reintegrating the new you, because the new you will be born.
Yeah.
And we're very much about, you know, and Mick has the skill set to do that, to empower you and anyone else that wants to go on and do this independently.
Yeah.
You know, there's no need for us. If you have the right training,
we can produce all the coaches and trainers, so there's no problem.
I'd like that.
There's nothing more powerful than a survivor talking to another survivor. You know, we find it with veterans. We've trained a number of organisations with their own veteran teams. And of course, the biggest cry with the veterans was nobody understands us.
Exactly.
Well, actually, nobody understands a woman that's experienced some of the stuff that she's experienced. Yeah. It's unreasonable to even expect them to do that.
Yeah.
There's nothing quite like veterans helping veterans or survivors helping survivors.
Yeah, they've got the understanding.
Yeah, they have, yeah.
Again, going back to my retreat idea, I'd like to be able to cater for the children as well. So bring your children as well, because
we have a system
it opens the doors.
We have a system for children that is second to none. I can't think of anything more powerful.
Well, let's do it.
And the proof of the pudding's in the eating, right? So
yeah.
We're all about results.
Yeah, let's do it.
Cool, okay.
All right then.
Yeah.
Are we done? Oh, yeah. Oh, I think it went fabulous. Couldn't have gone any better. Really, really positive. I'm really, really excited. Like, that's a major step for us in the right direction. They totally get it. Their dreams and goals are the same as mine, which is amazing. What's going to happen is I'm going to have the therapy, and then they're going to train me to be able to deliver the therapy in our own group. So hopefully there'll be groups all over the place, all over the country, not just in one location, because it's, you know, it needs to be a national thing.
Fantastic.
But that way, I think it went really, really well. We need some nice people, really, to make some nice donations. Anybody got a 6-bed house we could lend for a week? That'll do. It's going to take a lot of hard work, but this will work.
This is
the way forward, and today is that's the major step in the right direction.
Fantastic.
To where we want to be.
Just catching up on how the meeting went with Sarah and the mental health organisation, and it looks very positive. One point, when I was watching Sarah at the end, she says,
"We need some nice people, really, to make some nice donations. Anybody got 6-bed house we could lend for a week? That'll do."
It's a location for a retreat for the girls, and I know the perfect location. I actually hired the venue years ago for filming, and it's perfect for this. So I'm going to contact the owner and see if there's a chance that maybe the girls can use it. And I just know for what it is, for where it is, for the location, for everything, it's perfect for them. So let's see if we can put that into action.
Yeah, we're just approaching. How do you feel about this place?
She's still in the living room, Michael.
Yeah.
This. It's sleeps, it's sex, isn't it? Sex, and then, obviously, that room there as well. And we've got a lovely setting. When it comes to training, will we do it in there and then? Yeah, we'd use a space. We'll work out a plan for that. We'll need a sort of space where we do the communal stuff. And then, because there'll be two of us here, we'll need two spaces.
We may end up having to use the bedroom or something, or if it's nice, we can use outside.
Yeah, and we'll sort out dates and things. I can't wait to talk to you, I'll bet you by the end of the week we get you doing the boat. I can't hear you too. Can you just see how much I've changed since being here? It's been raining and I'm sat here like it's middle of summer in Barbados with me two swans and me one of them baby ones called Cygnus. Look at them. This is what we need, guys. It's almost like surreal. It's like I said, I had to pinch myself. Is this happening? Like, am I here or am I dreaming this? But now it's perfect. Look at the land. Just to go for a walk, I've just been for a little drive around the land. And even that, it's just perfect. If you just want to be on your own, there's a lot of space here to be on your own and reflect. And that's what a lot of us need, I think.
Download Getter Now from the App Store to follow my every move. They have tried to hide these crimes for decades. Now they try to silence us on all their social medias. We need you to share this promo everywhere. Put it in your WhatsApp groups, send it to your families, send it on your email lists. And make sure everyone joins Getter.
And there you go. What a ride. Welcome back to the English Fence League Radio Show with your host, Jeff Danger Man Mitchell. Jeff, what do you think, buddy?
Well, you know, as I say, the thing about it's made Sarah's dreams and expectations come through, and you could hear it in her voice, the joy, because now she can look forward to bringing some of those poor survivors there and to reshape their, build their lives again, where hopefully, unfortunately, you can never take away what actually happened, and that thing, I think, will always live with them. But it helps them build their lives and that they can move away from this situation totally and start a new life. I think that Tommy, what he's been doing, I salute Tommy, and of course that Sarah, for her courage and conviction, that she wanted to form an organisation for these girls. And thank goodness for Sarah and many other people out there who are stepping forward and doing this great work. And, you know, it needs to be done. You know, we talk about stopping the crimes before they happen. Unfortunately, we do live in a time where these crimes are protected by, you know, the police, the government cover it up and protects the ones who's doing these crimes, and throw the victims onto a rubbish heap. And it is tragic. That happens, and that we have to have someone as brave as Sarah step forward and say, no, we've got to give something to some of these girls, because she knows there's thousands of these girls right up and down the country. So we need special places, a bit like a sanctuary for these girls to go and to have some counselling and to put their lives in so they can move forward, hopefully, for a better life. So kudos to everybody for the work has put in, especially Tommy, for the work that he got to organise. The place, ladies and gentlemen, you get the chance to look where these girls can go for their retreat and bit of build back in their lives. It is perfect location, peace, tranquility, and everything that you need once you've been through a traumatic experience. So, like these young women, have their lives have been affected, and not only themselves, but you know, for the families around them as well. So, Dave, would you like to add anything to that? Because I think this is a part of a story that we've always said something has got to come back. We didn't know. And it's very serious, brought this thing forward. With the help of Tommy, we've finding a place. This is one of the best things, I'd say, with Tommy's career, what he's been doing, to bring it forward in a circle, basically, to be at this time and place now. So, absolutely fantastic work all around. But back to you, Dave, for your words on it.
Well, first of all, if anybody wants details, including where they can see the, you know, the video, and it's not just a promo, that's part three. If anybody wants the details on that, they can visit Tommy Robinson 1 on Getter. And, of course, he also has a Rumble page, which we reflect the URL of in our show page here at blogtalkradio.com. So you can see if there, and of course, he'll put a lot of announcements and things of that nature up on Getter involving his series of documentaries and all of the news about the survivors and people like that. So it's a good place to continue the conversation. It's a conversation you should all have with those that you know. Even if, for instance, you're Americans and you think things like this aren't going on in the United States, trust me, they are. This is a show here that you should share out with people and make them aware, because I guarantee you our press is not going to do that. My final impression of this documentary was, what a ride. It started out with Sarah in the depths of despair and sadness and not trusting anyone, and I can totally understand that, and saying that she needed for her voice to count, that her voice should count. It started out with that, and it ended with me grinning from ear to ear, listening to her laughter and how happy she was that she and the other survivors will have a bit of a place for sanctuary and to help them deal with some of these issues. So this is an excellent documentary and well for sharing around. And I say, just as Jeff did, God bless not only Tommy Robinson, but God bless Sarah and all of the people who are out there fighting this conflict on the ground. And Jeff, do you have anything else before I, like anything out of the chat room or whatever, before I do my finals?
Yeah, just a moment, Doug. I'll just see if any comments in chat room. No, it's quiet in the chat room. But, yeah, we've just, although Bigfoot might be a family event, because, as I say, they will be having the fireworks later on across the country, won't they, Dave, as you telling our listeners earlier. But no, it's quiet there. We've still got a dark Northwest media that's sitting there. I hope you've enjoyed the show this evening. I'll say, brother, I've been pulled up so much. I'm a lady, you think. Oh, cool. You know, it's easy to make mistakes as it is, because I normally call people brother, and they say, no, I'm a sister. And you think, oh, once again, I'll do it. But anyway, Dave, you know what? I got to admit that just one more thing I want to say. When I heard Sarah laugh, it brought a joyous feeling to me. You know, you could hear, actually, she's come through this absolutely traumatic nightmare. Because we could hear her despair. We could hear that. But here she's come through this nightmare and woke up into making a dream reality. Was wonderful, and it's always going to leave a lasting impression with me, Dave. That's how I'd like to summarise how I feel at this moment. And onward and forward with the works, you know, it's just the beginning, it's just the dawning of something that's great. With the help of the good Lord above, I mean, this will drive forward, and you'll find different groups like this going on across the country, God willing. With that, Dave, back to you.
All right, just want to tell people once again, remind them, on Thursday, the 7th of July, we are going to have a special program. It is going to be at our normal time, 8:30 p.m. in the U.K., and that's 3:30 p.m. Eastern in the United States. We're going to recognize the anniversary of the 7/7 bombings in London and, of course, the 7/7 BLM terror attack in Dallas at the same time on that day. And you're all invited to take part in that show. And also, please check out the Unpleasant Blind Guy page at Spreaker.com. My normal show times are, 1 p.m. Eastern Time, Monday through Friday. That's 6 p.m. in the U.K., Monday through Friday. And I have normally new shows at midnight on Saturday Eastern Time in the United States, and that is 5 a.m. on Saturday in the UK. I'm also, you can also hear me usually on Thursdays at TECNTV.com on the Exceptional Conservative Show with host Kenneth McClinton. That will come on at about 2 a.m. Friday in the UK and at 9 p.m. Eastern in the United States on Thursday. And I'm also available through SHR Media and things of that nature. And I just want to say to the foot soldiers and angels and all of the survivors and all of those who support them, no surrender ever. And Jeff, I do have yet another postcard from the JAM. They're still in DR Congo, only this time they're racing around on zebras. Now, how they're able to do that, I don't know, because you're not supposed to be able to ride a zebra, but they are. Still, we have the JAM here, we still have Alex and the Bandits here, and they're ready to go. So you just let them know when to go ahead and get started. And you got, okay, get your hand out of that packet of peanuts. And I knew you were going to throw them, Jeff. Cut it out.
They always disagree, you know, they're always naughty, aren't they? You know what I mean? Alex, behave yourself. You can't resist it. but once again, ladies and gentlemen, you know, this show tonight, you know, which we titled The Rape of Britain, you've heard part three of a documentary that Mr. Tommy Robinson has been doing, and that was a totally exceptional part this evening. So we've got probably another two more parts to do of in this series, but this has been such an important documentary that Tommy started, and as I say, part three that we've heard tonight, ladies and gentlemen, you might hear more if you go on Tommy's page, his Getter page, or you go on his Rumble, and you'll probably see the whole thing. You know, you just listen to the audio tonight, but you can see the whole thing of how it unfolded and see the place where we talked about how beautiful it was. But there you go, once again, another great show for this evening, and I hope you've enjoyed it, the show, as much as Dave and myself has been presenting it to you, our awesome listeners out there. So with that, Dave, let me pass it back to you, because so we'll be back again here Thursday night. It's so important that we commemorate that date, which is, you know, and especially what happened in Dallas with them officers that was, you can say they was executed by these awful terrorists out there. So we will be having a special show on Thursday evening. I hope you come and join us and listening as we pay a tribute to all those that lost their lives on that day. And everybody that interceded, that was there, the first responders. And so we had a dear friend that was part of that response team. So with that, please join us again this Thursday. With that, Dave, all I've got to say is God bless, take care, stay safe, and we'll see you Thursday. With that, Dave, over to you.
All right, and wishing everybody in the United States a happy Independence Day tomorrow. Yeah. All right, guys, stop throwing your peanuts at Jeff, and let's get to going. God bless everybody.
News of the world said we are hooligans. We're the only people to defend your rights. And I won't stand by and watch this country die. So roll Britannia with the EDL. Go, man!
Cheers, Alex. We'll see you next week. We'll see you Thursday. Take care, mate. I just want to make one more comment just for Duck Northwest Media. He's saying to his birthday, much thanks and appreciating to all for the program. And I've responded, thank you, Duck Northwest Media. Cheers. Appreciate your comment. And we mean that, me and Dave. Hope we see you this Thursday. And we'll be back again Sunday as usual. So good to see you this evening. Have a good evening. God bless. Have a night. Let me bring you back where I was and just do this. And just say, once again, Dave, thank you for all the work put into this show for this evening. The great script and the slides and the audios and all the things that you do. Really, really appreciate it, brother. and I'll speak to you in the next couple of days or so. Cheers, Dave, and Duck Northwest Media. It's been I've really enjoyed doing the show tonight with my dear friend Dave. So with that, I'll just say this is the English Defence League radio show signing off for tonight. But I say we'll see you again Thursday for a special 7-7 episode that we'll be doing. So with that, good night. God bless.